I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm sitting here in Studio B, sitting across from my good friend Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting across from my good friend Benjamin Alira Sainz.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Today we are going to inaugurate the Three Timers Club. That is, guests who have appeared on our show for three times. And the first one is...
Juan Felipe Herrera.
Poet Laureate of California, a fantastic writer, and just one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. He's just a good guy.
And we're speaking to him from a Volkswagen dealership.
That's right. He's having a problem with his Volkswagen, so apparently he had to go into a dealership, and he's sitting in a waiting room waiting for us to call him on the phone and to talk to him. So this is going to be pretty interesting. I wonder if we're going to hear like mechanics yelling in German in the background.
You know, I can't think of a better place to interview Juan Felipe Herrera than a Volkswagen dealership. It's very Juan Felipe Herrera-esque.
Absolutely. And for Poetic License this week, we have Nancy Lechuga. She is a local poet from here in El Paso, and she's going to share a few words with us. And then for the Poem of the Week, you're going to read one of Juan Felipe's poems called Canada in English.
And it's a lovely poem.
So I tell you, I'm just grateful that I don't have to go into a car dealership because, you know, you have to spend the whole day there. You have to be there at 7 a.m. and then you probably don't get out until 5 or 6. And I just don't enjoy it. I have a Hyundai that I have to take in order to keep the warranty. And I think it's overdue. But you have a truck that was what, like 1973?
No, it's 2001, but it looks like it was 1973. The troca is cateada like me,
you know,
but I named the truck Chewy, you know.
You know, I like Chewy. Chewy's been good to you, but, you know, I think it's time for you to get a new car, Ben.
Well, I'm looking into it, but I'm having withdrawal pains from Chewy. Every time I get in it, I just have all these memories.
Yeah, well, I have my car, and it looks like a ghetto car. It's falling apart. I keep hitting things. My bumper drags down. I have to every now and then pull off the road and get off and put the bumper back in so it doesn't drag. And then the door, one time I was backing out of an alley and I ran over this big giant rock. And so now the door, you have to, in order to close it, you have to push it really hard. Or otherwise, it'll keep going beep, beep, beep.
You know what? I'm just not into cars. I'm not a car guy, you know. I like to listen to car talk, interestingly enough. But cars are not my thing. I'd rather go buy another book.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know,
book, a lot cheaper,
book is $10. The thing is, my car, you know, as ghetto as it looks, it's new. So I can't take it in and replace it with another one because I still have like 4 years of payments to go.
Well, we'll just have to take more shows so you can make more money.
Absolutely, because I am getting rich off of this show. So stay tuned. We'll be right back and we'll talk to Juan Felipe live, well, taped, from a Volkswagen car dealership in California, which is, I think, also the Poet Laureate's office.
Stay tuned.
Juan Felipe Herrera is the current Poet Laureate of the state of California. He is an author of so many books of poems that to list them would take the entire show, but among them, the award-winning 187 Reasons Mexicanos Can't Cross the Border. He is the first poet that has appeared on our show for three times, and we're very glad to have him back on the show. Juan Felipe, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you very much. Muchas gracias.
Juan, you are part of the Three Timers Club. In fact, you're the very first member of the Three Timers Club. This is your third time on the Words on the Wire. And you know what? I just can't imagine doing a year without you. How have things been going for you?
Well, they're going pretty good. And thank you for putting me up as a three-timer. I appreciate it. I just got back from Oakland, from the Bay Bridge. I was invited by the Department of Transportation. Imagine that. To write a poem to inaugurate the new Bay Bridge because they just added a whole new section.
Oh, you are the California Poet Laureate, so that makes sense that they would ask you. What did you say?
Well, you know, I talked about in the poem, you know, I talked about the bridge as an arc across generations, across the conversations and stories of the people that go through it, and also a link between the ocean, the sky, the stars in our lives. I went for the big picture, and I also thanked all the workers that worked on it, the men and women and everyone. And that's what I did, you know. I had a lot of fun doing it. It was great to be up there on that stage with the mayors and the lieutenant governor and addressing about 1,000 people, many workers and city reps out there on Pier 7 off of Oakland. And then getting on the bridge and helping cut the chain with a welder's glove. And Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom did the torch, and then it popped open, and then I got in a vintage 1924 Hudson with some of the great people there, and with many other vintage cars, we flew across the bridge and came right back. It was an all-day affair. It was great.
You're the California Poet Laureate, and just recently Alberto Rios was named the Arizona Poet Laureate. So that's pretty amazing. Two Chicanos are the state poet laureates. Do you think that we can get all 50 states eventually? And what do you think this means?
Oh, I think it's happening because Carmen Tafoya is a San Antonio poet laureate.
And Rosemary Catacalos is the poet laureate of Texas this year.
And Alejandro Murguia is a San Francisco poet laureate. And I'm going to Salinas next week to be part of the inauguration of the first Latino youth laureate. So laureates are laureating, and I'm so glad that it's a lot of Chicanada and a lot of Latinas, Latinos coming through, you know, all the waves and waves of the work that has been done through many, many communities across the United States and Latin America have made this happen, really. And it's not just me or California. It's all of our ancestors crossing those trails and migrating back and forth that have put their words out in the air and as they worked in the fields and as they wrote in little pieces of paper back home. It's coming out to this point, you know, with much very different manner being laureates. Lovely. I appreciate everything.
Speaking of those little pieces of paper, Juan Felipe, what are you working on now?
What am I working on now? Oh, gosh, I'm on this project of Latino, Latina Heroes. It's a great project. It's 20 people. It was excruciating selecting them with the publisher. I've had this project for a number of years, and I finally got back on it last year because I said, I just better get on. It's never going to end. It's, you know, we're doing research. It's taking notes and creating a story that kind of really talks about who they really are. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm barreling down to the last two. Right now I'm doing Judy Baca and then Jaime Escalante. And I may finish up with Laura Rodriguez, an amazing elder community activist in San Diego in the 70s. She passed away. Then there's other people like, you know, Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez and Tomas Rivera and Adelina Warren and way back in the middle and all the way up to the present.
So, are all of the figures that you chose political figures? There's no writers in there?
No, you see, that was the thing. You know, if it was up to me, totally me, then, you know, it probably changed a bit. But no, they're not all political figures. Like, well, in a way, I mean, everything's political. I got Desi Arnaz in there. Desi Arnaz.
Ah, nice.
Well, writers are pretty good at tooting their own horn anyway.
Well, Tomas Rivera is a writer, but really he was an academic activist.
That's right, an academic activist and a fabulous poet, and the pieces he wrote, you know, were, you know, really deep. God, his pieces are powerful. They're like sledgehammers. Las salamandras, the salamanders. Man, that's a sledgehammer. The ending of that piece is, it runs a chill through my tuétano, through the core of my marrow of my bones. So, yeah, some of them are writers, educators. Ellen Ochoa, the astronaut, the first Latina astronaut in space. And once you get into what she's all about, it's a frijol blower. It'll blow your mind.
How did you conceive of this project?
I was called on by my children's book agent, Kendra Marcus, and she goes, I got something. Are you interested in it? And you know me. I go, oh, yeah. It's not poetry. So it's hard for me to do. I have to change brains. So I had to grow another brain, another lobe.
Yeah, but you can be poetic. I'm sure you're being very poetic about it. I'm sure you're keeping your voice as a writer.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew a little nonfiction Juan Felipe voice, but it takes a lot of research to get to it, as opposed to hitting the page full blast with enchiladas whirling around your ears, you know, which is poetry.
But you're still writing poetry, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm still writing poetry. I haven't had a chance to really carve out a full manuscript, which is usually what I like to do. I like to start from page one and go all the way to page whatever. When I'm doing poetry, I've never been, a poet that writes one poem here, one poem there, and then kind of puts them together. I'm more like I write a series of poems together that kind of are brothers and sisters. But anyway, that's changed now. That's no longer true. So I'm writing poems here and there.
When your tenure as California Poet Laureate ends, will you get back to creating families of poems again?
Yeah, I think I will. You know, I have an idea of writing putting together a book with nothing but numbers, like telephone numbers, and drone sighting drawings. Telephone numbers and drone sighting drawings that tell a story, a poetic story, and without words. And so that's what I want to do next. I think I want to call it Drone Poem.
So, Juan Felipe, how long have you been writing, and how long have you been teaching?
I've been writing, you know how we have different points of how long we've been writing. I've been writing since middle school, when Mr. Warner told us to change words around in sentences so they could be fresh and different and kind of sparkle. As opposed to saying, in 1848, the state of California was, you know, annexed from Mexico. Instead of saying that, you would say something, I don't know, you know, in the bloody throes of an imposition of colonialism, the state of California was, you know, dragged into a new polity, you know. So from that point on, I became very aware of playing with sentences and vocabulary.
And when did you begin publishing?
Publishing probably in high school. In high school, because, you know, like many of us, we got into the local high school publishing rag. So me too. I was in Quill and Scroll. I was a member of Quill and Scroll and published some poems to the Quill and Scroll literary magazine in San Diego High. I didn't have anything else to do. You know, I lived a block from high school in the middle of downtown. And there were hamburger shops, laundries, and tiendas de abarrotes, so and car dealerships. So I would go downtown as a kid and goof around or go to the library or join 1,000 clubs in high school, which I did. So that's where I started publishing. And then as time went on, UCLA, I kind of joined some literary groups there, Wheaties. I was a founder of the Wheaties magazine, which I titled, which didn't go anywhere. Well, at least I founded it.
So what did you publish in Wheaties?
I collected poems for Wheaties. And what I ended up doing in terms of publishing, that's when I hit the Centro Cultural in 1972 in San Diego. And there I did publish other people's work and founded a newsletter with Lynn Romero called Mazorca, Community Raza Publications, as you guys know. So I published in those. I published in La Verdad from San Diego. I published in La Gente from UCLA. And I published in some places in San Francisco during the early 70s. And by 74, I published Rebosos of Love at the Centro Cultural. It was a collective organization where everybody had a say. So I told them, hey, I'd like to publish, you know, my collection, and they agreed. And
we're talking to Juan Felipe Herrera. Juan, tell me, I know you're really good at memorizing poems. Do you remember the first poem you memorized?
The first poem I memorized? Well, I think I only have a fragment of it right now. A las cinco de la tarde, a las cinco en punto de la tarde. You know, that one.
Yes.
You know, mine was Edgar Allan Poe in third grade. I think I did Oh, In Search of El Dorado, Gaily Night, or something, blah, blah, blah.
And mine was Emily Dickinson, Because I Could Not Stop for Death, He Kindly Stopped for Me. His carriage held just ourselves and immortality. That was in eighth grade.
Oh, that's nice. You were, you know, you're way out there. That's beautiful in eighth grade. You know, we should put together a little chapbook of poems that Chicano, Latina, Latino poets memorized first.
That would be an interesting little collection.
See, that's what I like about you, Juan. Any point of the conversation, you turn into an anthology. That's an amazing vision you have.
Yeah, life is an anthology of endless lives.
Do you have any plans on retiring anytime soon from teaching at UC Riverside? Or are you just going to kind of go on and on and on?
No, I do have plans of retiring next year, probably. You know, I came back to Fresno, and I'm creeping towards the Bay Area. Sooner or later, I'll end up in Point Reyes, which I really like.
Oh, it's beautiful there.
Or North Beach. I wouldn't mind a little changarrito in North Beach, you know, looking out a little window right above Molinari's and getting a rope and sliding down to Molinari's and getting a hard torta and one of those, you know, Italian sodas and sneaking back to one of the liquor shops and getting myself a pack of black tobacco Galois.
That sounds like a great life.
Actually, you could move to Half Moon Bay and you could go eat at Duarte's. And it's really Duarte's, but everyone calls it Duarte's.
Those are my kind of places.
You have a position at UC Riverside. How do you negotiate your teaching at the university level with all your other duties?
That's a good question. You know, it's hard. I need to travel these days on my laureate mobile, so it's tough. You know, I teach twice a week, so the Department of Creative Writing is very kind to me. So they put my classes back to back, so that I have one day.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
But it's tough because if I do have to leave one day, it kind of knocks my momentum off. And I like to keep those students. You know, I want to be with them all the time because that's what I'm there for. So it's a little tough. And then writing, I write on planes. Don't you guys love planes, writing on planes?
I like drinking on planes, actually.
No, I take a yellow pad with me. I take a yellow pad with me, and I write longhand on planes.
Me too. Yeah, we should talk about that too, man. You know, how we like to write longhand on planes.
There's another anthology.
And you know what? The first time I met you on a plane.
I remember that.
Do you remember? I was reading a book on poetry criticism, and you passed me, and you knew it was me.
Yeah.
Because we'd never met.
Of course, from Calendar of Dust. I knew you because you had a Calendar of Dust on your hand. And we were going to Nuevo Mexico, right? We were going to El Paso?
I don't remember where we were going, but we were on the same plane and you passed me by. And then you knew it was me and I knew it was you. And then we became friends. We were going to a conference.
That's right.
We were going to a conference. No, we were going to San Antonio.
You're right. Passing each other on a plane. That's good.
There's another anthology, passing each other on the plane.
If Allen Ginsberg can write a book about being in the locomotive, we can write a book about being on planes.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And you know, every time Ben and I hang out a lot, not only do we do this show together, but we're also colleagues in the same department and we're good friends. And one of the things Ben always does is whenever I say something, like let's say I say, boy, it's a hard day, Ben will say, that's a title. Write it. That's write the poem.
I think everything's a title. We've been talking to Juan Felipe Herrera. It's too bad you don't have a poem with you because you're at the Volkswagen shop.
You know, maybe you could just like freestyle one. I remember the first time we had you on the show, I asked you to freestyle, put you on the spot, and boy, you did. You did it.
Why don't we do this? I will pick a poem of yours and read it later on for this show in honor of you.
That will be the poem of the week.
Oh, thank you so much. You guys are the greatest.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us and for being the first member of the Three Timers Club for Words on Wire.
Juan Felipe Herrera.
I am honored.
Thank you for being on our show.
Muchas gracias. I love both of you guys.
Canada in English by Juan Felipe Herrera. Mrs. Tinko says Canada, She says, Ontario, Canada. I whisper in Spanish, Canada, to myself in the back row. Next to Sammy, who inks a skull into his hand between his thumb and his finger. I squint at the chalkboard English, a greenish sea, a tidal wave that floods me with strange curled words. Can't read. I say Canada. My mouth opens as if to bite a stolen apple. Then my face hardens again. I want to raise my hand. My arm is iron plank. Fingers are rivets. My blood is electric. I whisper Canada, only to myself, in Spanish, when no one is watching. When no one is listening, I write Canada on the inside of my hand. Look up to the tidal wave. You gotta look up, Cesar. I talk to myself like Mama Lucy. Is Denver by Canada? When I left Mexico as a kid alone, Papi used to say, I jumped off the train in El Norte in Denver, learned English in the snow. Then he'd laugh. A penny for each word, he said. That's how I learned. How do you say lápiz in English? Pencil. Ah, pencil. How do you say leche in English? Milk. Ah, milk. How about cielo? Sky. Ah, sky. Three words for 3 pennies. I look at the watery map by the limp flag. Wonder about my father, his other family. Look without words in English. Squint without words in Spanish. Sammy elbows me and laughs at my right hand. Canada is for sissies, Cesar. Skulls are for us. That was a poem by Juan Felipe Herrera entitled Canada in English.
I am Nancy Lechuga, local poet, educator, and mother. Recently, a friend asked me to get on a roller coaster with him, and when I told him I was afraid, he asked me why. So when I didn't know what to answer, I really thought about it and tried to trace back the origin of my fear, which in turn made me think about all the things that I fear, and this is what came out. First rolled cucuy. My mother raised me with fear, a most effective parenting method. My childhood consisted of nighttime stories of witches and big black wolves, horror movies, and mujer casos de la vida real. Like many Mexican mothers, she threatened me with La Llorona and any other demonic character she could think of. There was Ursula the Sea Witch for when I talked back, Freddy Krueger for the times I refused to shower, the little girl from The Exorcist for tantrum control, and Chucky the Demon Doll, who, according to my mother, lived in California. The scariest and most convincing cucuy was El Viejo del Costal, an old man who roamed the alleys of our neighborhood in Segundo Barrio, carrying a big sack in which he collected aluminum cans and scavenged for kids who refused to eat their huevitos con chorizo. Besides monsters, Mom also threatened me with possible illnesses and the promise of permanent damage. My bad behavior could give her a heart attack or stroke, an ulcer, or gallbladder stones. The threats would be followed by a real-life story of a neighbor or a friend of a friend who this happened to. She really believed my disobedience could kill her. And it wasn't only my mother perpetuating fear. She herself was being manipulated and controlled by fear tactics. In this country, our emotions are fondled, raped. The news is filled with war and death, children missing, extreme poverty, murder, car accidents, and gruesome stories like that of some guy that ate some other guy's face. Yes, these things are happening all over the world, in our own homes, and to the people we know and love. But how much of this can a human being take without becoming terrified, extremely disillusioned, and hopeless? Every aspect of our life is plagued with fear, and the very lucrative entertainment industry is the most obvious culprit. Hollywood movies about end of days, mass hysteria, and outbreaks of illnesses are more effective at propagating fear than Freddy Krueger or any other monster from my childhood ever could. Commercials show giant bacteria chasing an unsuspecting family, hiding on your doorknobs and behind shower curtains. Pharmaceutical ads list common symptoms that convince you that you are suffering from fibromyalgia or restless leg syndrome. And really, what could be more terrifying than wearing last season's shoes or not having the very latest phone? The ridicule would be unbearable. And let's not forget the many studies conducted by Ivy League universities that find links between food and ADHD, cancer and coffee, and vaccines that may or may not cause autism. I'm not saying all these things are not legitimate fears and real possibilities, but these fears are controlling our lives so much that we are willing to spend hundreds of dollars and give up many of our human rights in exchange for the promise of security. All in all, I was shaped by fear. I do not play sports, dance, ride roller coasters, or fight back. I never climbed trees or monkey bars, roller skated, or freaked a hottie in a Aquatis club. Instead, I read books, lived vicariously through my poetry, and locked myself in a metaphorical box. Literally, at night, when I was so terrified with the monsters in my head or with horrible possibilities, I imagined locking myself in a very, very small metal box where nothing would be able to get to me. Now that I am older, El Cucuy is no longer a monster under my bed, but a rosary-wearing machista, a sexually depraved white supremacist who is bearer of bad news and entertains my hypochondriac tendencies. He whispers lasciviously into my ear, cups my breasts, brews in my coffee, and edits my poems. He likes to sneak up behind me, ruin my relationships, and hide his trash in the neat folds of my brain, like empty potato chip wrappers in between sofa cushions. He tells me that when the motion sensors turn on my outside light, it's a thief coming to take my children. He says that my dancing is ridiculous, my writing mediocre, and that if I ride a roller coaster, I will vomit or plummet to my death. When he sneaks into my house, I throw him out and light my sage bundle. But sometimes I catch myself talking about him to my daughter, and I suspect he visits her in her dreams and while I'm in the bathroom or busy on Facebook. My mother never meant any harm by introducing El Cucuy to me. She was just a product of her environment, a victim of her own upbringing. She was a loving mother, always present in my life, and gave me all the love and attention I could ever need. But she was also a young woman full of fears, and she unconsciously taught me her destructive patterns. Now that I am a mother myself, I see her on a more human level, and I thank her just as much as I forgive her. As hard as I try to be a good mother, I know that inevitably I will cause my children some harm and show them the fear that hides in the seams of my dress. I just pray that the damage is minimal, so that most of their time on earth is spent realizing their dreams and not trying to overcome childhood traumas. This is why it is so important for me to write and speak out about the things that are taboo in my family. Once a monster is named, it is possible to destroy him. I hope that when my children are older, they will both thank and forgive me, as well as teach me how to forgive myself. So now, I am determined to shift, unlearn the bad, and allow myself to take celebratory cartwheels, paint indigenous war symbols on my face, wear too much glitter, take serenatas to my lovers, sharpen my tongue, and live a life free of fear. I'm Nancy Lechuga for Words on a Wire.
We'd like to thank California Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera for being on Words on a Wire for the third time, and it's always a pleasure to have him.
We'd like to thank Nancy Lechuga for her
lovely poetic license. That was beautiful.
And we'd like to thank you, our listeners, and our producer, Nora Martinez.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Benjamin Alida Sainz.
Thank you for joining us for Words on a Wire.
And remember,
the next book you read
may save your life.
I'm up on the tight wire.